Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Not getting into universities, dropping out of universities, just did kind of feel a bit like, oh god, I've balls this up. Like, this isn't what a successful job is. And I just remember like writing this essay at the application process for LCF and like going for an interview and going home from Ludbrook Grove, just crying on the tube and being like, that's it. What now? And it did feel a bit like, what now? Because from that point, you're like, what do I do? Like, how do I go forward? And it kind of is up to you.
Hello and welcome back to Beautiful Lives, a podcast in which I, Madeline Spencer, am joined by guests to share some of the challenges they faced and triumphs they've enjoyed during their life, as well as touching on the relationship between their inner and outer self and where beauty memories and rituals have had an impact. Today, I'm joined by the blogger, author, and founder of the Insecure Girls Club, Liv Purvis, to talk about how she came to find success online, on the joys and pitfalls of that job, how her experiences led her to found the Insecure Girls Club, and how she finds balance today. One of the standout things about Liv is that her life and passions aren't a construct. She's emphatically herself, and I found myself smiling while listening back to this during the edit because she's so natural and just a joy to chat to. So I hope you enjoy listening to our conversation as much as I enjoyed having it. Here's Liv.
Tell me about young Liv.
Young Liv, oh my goodness.
Was it young Olivia or young Liv?
A bit of both. I mean, I feel like Olivia is what people call me when they either don't know me that well or I'm in trouble. So I feel like if someone meets me and they're like, hi Olivia, I'm like, oh, what have I done, oh God. Like, I mean, growing up, I've had, like, my dad calls me Polly, or my mum calls me Livy. So it's kind of like, I think Liv is like, that's the name, that's who I am. But tell me about young Liv. I'm like, that's such a big question. I'm like, how far back do you want to go?
Go right to the beginning.
Right to the beginning.
What kind of kid were you?
I was, I feel like I've always been very, I don't know, like, I look back and I'm like, I'm so myself. But yeah. Like, I've always loved, like, performing. And it's weird because I feel like, one of the things my nan always says is like, oh, she used to take me to ballet and I loved dancing, but I always dragged her on to the floor with me, like she had to hold my hand. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's so reflective of who I am as an adult. Like, I love, like, I don't know, not performing, because that feels like I'm like online being like the Liv show, but like, I've always loved kind of being creative, but always had that kind of side of me that's really like self-aware of it as well and quite conscious. So I've always been like, oh god, even when I did like drama, I went to like Stagecoach growing up, I was so like, oh, I know what we would be good here in like an audition, like I should do a great American accent, but I was too like, oh god, people will think that's so stupid if you do that.
Part of me thinks that's a British sensibility mixed with a natural performer. So
yeah.
It's like, you are the performer, but somewhere in you there's that British voice going, no, no, dear.
Yeah, like, honestly, like, you sound ridiculous. Yeah. And I think that kind of helped me back. Like, I could be on Broadway right now.
Could be on Broadway.
I'm wasted.
Yeah.
But I feel there's always been that part of me that's always been kind of, like, nervous about the concept of attention.
Right.
Despite what I do, which is so, like, I feel it's, even with my job now, I'm so conflicted with, you know, obviously being centre stage and kind of talking about my life and being quite vulnerable online, but also being like, oh, that feels so unnatural for me as well, because I don't love, it's weird, I don't love being the centre of attention, but if you looked at what I do on Instagram and like watch me on stories, like sometimes I'm like, oh my god, my neighbours must think, god, she really loves the sound of her own voice, but then I'm like, I don't, but I like talking. Like, is this weird conflict that you're constantly grappling against online? But yeah, I loved like dancing. I love being creative. I mean, my dad's very, very creative.
What does your dad do?
He's a barber.
Okay.
With very normal haircuts. But he's always been really into music, and he very much kind of took me to my first gigs.
Yeah. What kind of music was he into?
All sorts of things. He loves Bob Dylan. I've seen like Bob Dylan with him.
Yeah.
Like, I'm trying to think now. I'm like, oh God, what's my dad like? It's such a lot of pressure, like Bowie, like just real kind of
good music,
real good music. And he's always been like, I mean, when I was growing up, I loved like reading The Enemy, and we went to a gig. My dad would always come with me and my best friend to gigs, and he'd kind of sit up and like, do you remember the Astoria?
Yes.
The best venue ever. Thanks, TFL. That's for another podcast. But he would go and sit upstairs and we'd be downstairs. And there was one occasion where we went and he got talking to a journalist and she was like, oh, I work for the NME. And my dad was like, oh, that's amazing. My daughter's like, was wanted to like do some work experience. And she gave him like her email and it kind of went from there.
So
I emailed and I did some work experience at the NME. But like, he's just always been like... someone that's just, I don't know, it's like, I've never felt like people are like, oh, you go to gigs with your dad, that's nice. And I'm like, no, but it's cool. I'm not like, it's not a thing.
So I'm thinking about the music thing as being also an aesthetic thing, because around those singers, there is a look, right? And there's a kind of, and I'm thinking about how you are quite, I don't want to say retro, but you know, you appreciate a nod to the 60s and you kind of channel that a bit.
I feel like, I mean, I'd like to think that that's kind of, it's, I suppose my style is so influenced by what I listen to, and I look back at, I mean, it was definitely inspired by what I listened to in 2008. If you'd have seen me, like, yellow skinny jeans, like, very into new rave, then very into, like, emo music. I've always been very governed by, like, those things.
Emo music was a time.
It was a time. I mean, like, I really fancied myself as, like, Panic at the Disco's number one fan. I was like, I'm going to see them in Vegas. Obviously, I was 15 and it didn't happen. A girl can dream. But I feel like that's kind of been like, I mean, my mum and my nan are both big into fashion, so that's kind of also been like a big influence. So I feel like it's funny, because becoming a parent now, you often, one thing I've thought about a lot is kind of like, oh, like, I think just bringing up a child, how can I make them a good human? Like, how can, all you want is for your child to just be a nice, kind, considerate, well-rounded person. I think actually when I look at my parents and how alike to them I am completely subconsciously, I find such comfort in that, because I'm actually like, God, I'm so much like my mum and dad without trying in any respect. And I think there's something quite nice to hold on to about the fact that hopefully a child just inherits part of that.
Yes, what they see.
The thing. So I'm kind of like, oh, actually, maybe if I just listen to like terrible, terrible music and dress really weird, that's just what my child's gonna be.
Like, you're just you.
That's the thing. Just like, I just cool waistcoats and weird stuff. But
tell me about your mum.
So my mum, she's like, we're so similar, like painfully similar. But she's my best friend. Like, I've been really lucky to have a really kind of close friend like relationship with her, which has always meant that I've been able to talk to her about things like boys and skincare and all these different things, and go shopping with her and never feel like weird about it. Like with my parents, I never see them as like, oh God, my parents are embarrassing. I've always been like, they're really cool. Like and I think that's something that, again, I feel really like, I'm so grateful for. Like, I'm just like, oh.
Do you have siblings then?
I've got a younger brother. Okay. Yeah. And he's,
so you're just this close family.
Yeah. Like, and that's, and it's, I think, yeah, they've very much shaped me, and me and my brother are very similar but also very different, because he's very quiet but very dry and quick, whereas I think I'm just kind of like a bit of the opposite. I'm loud and I'm just like, I made a joke, I did a funny, everyone. and he's just very much like, just comes out with a one-liner and I was like, oh yeah, wow, doesn't say a lot when he does.
So in your household when you were young, what was the culture around beauty and appearance? Was your mum someone who's into that?
Never really something I picked up on until later on, especially when I started getting into more beauty and skincare. That's when I was kind of like, oh, she's always done this. And that's when you kind of start picking up and be like, I know about this now too, mum. And like, my nan's always used like Lazelle's cleanse and polish, and now I'm kind of like, oh, I can talk to you about that. Like, I know about the latest launches as well, nan. She's probably like, okay, bless you. But it's funny, because I speak a little bit about this in the book, where I talk about how I think my mum's generation, there's always been quite a lot of pressure on how you look. And I remember like things like, there's always scales in the house and just things like that. And I remember like potentially at her and my nan like weighing themselves and things like that. And I do look back and I'm kind of like, God, that's so strange to me now.
Do you have scales in your house?
No.
Because I don't have scales in my house, but they were always at my parents' house.
They were always at my parents' house. Yeah. And And it was kind of something I thought, oh, that's what you do.
Yeah.
Like, that's as a woman, you just weigh yourself. Like, and I'm like, how weird. Like, how weird that that's just something we did. And I think my parents didn't have them for a long time, but my nan did. So when we went over to her house, my mum would be like, oh, can I buy the scales? And she'd weigh us. And I'm just kind of like, why did we do that?
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of something that I've unlearned a lot, because I'm just like, I don't need scales. I need scales for a suitcase, but I don't need to, like... it doesn't matter. I'm very much more like, if my clothes fit and I feel good and I feel happy in myself.
But what helped you unlearn that? Because I know that, so you do a lot with Insecure Girls Club. Yes. And that's something that you've obviously unpicked quite consciously, would say. What helped you?
I feel like it's almost a cocktail of like following lots of different people online who speak about body positivity and kind of almost being more aware of those things, because I think sometimes you exist and those things are so habitual, like you don't even pick up on them and you just think, oh, that's just what you do. And then actually when you see, I don't know, a meme on Instagram saying, why do people weigh themselves? And you're kind of like, God, that is a good question, isn't it? And then that's when you become more aware of those things and actually how problematic to a point they can actually be. And I think it was probably part of that, but also maybe moving out as well and kind of having to navigate making lots of decisions on my own. I think because I'm part of such a close family, I think sometimes even getting dressed, I'd be like, oh, does this look good? How does this look? And sometimes you're so reliant on the opinions of others that when you go into a new kind of space and you're living, I mean, I was living with my now husband, but I think he's not someone that's like, oh yeah, that looks right. He just kind of does his own thing. So I kind of was like, oh, okay, this sounds really pathetic saying it out loud, but you should make a lot of decisions on your own. Actually, you're kind of more conscious about things and you're like, what makes me feel good? What doesn't make me feel good? Why am I doing these things? And it's almost like, because I went to university and then dropped out, I didn't have that big growth period at university. Where I like became a young adult, I kind of went from being at sick form, was at university for like a couple of months, then moved back home. So it's kind of, it's been a different route, I think, to growing up.
So you touched on uni. I just want to look at your education.
Education.
So when you were a teenager, and that's generally when people start to merge with what they want to do, or rather have to put that into subjects and say, okay, I always wanted to be this, but this is the subject. What did you do? What did you choose to do?
I've always loved like art. I mean, I went to an all-girls school, which was fun. It was where my best friend from primary school was going, and I was like, perfect, that'll do. And in fairness I did meet my best friend there, who is my best friend today, and I wouldn't change the world. But going to an all-girls school, with the connection of beauty, it was like, I look back and I'm like, in many respects it meant that I didn't ever wear makeup to school, because I was like, I've got no one to impress.
Oh really? Because I went to an all-girls school for a while in my early teens. And it was quite makeup-y.
It was, but I think the makeup-y side of it was very Drew Matmos. Lots of fake tan, extensions, eyebrow plucking.
Okay, so you were still doing it, but it wasn't...
I mean, I didn't do it. Like, I was very much like, oh, I'm like... And even now, I look back and I'm like, oh, I had no one to impress, so I'm not going to bother putting makeup on, as if that's the only reason you put makeup on. But I felt quite, like, liberated by that. Like, I'm like, there's no boys here. Why would I bother? Like, and actually, on the other hand, I'm like, quite admired the girls that did wear makeup. So I'm like, you just did it for you. Like, that's even cooler. So I did study like art and history, and then I moved sick forms because it was near up home and like the sick form was better, blah blah blah. And I did history, art, photography and English lit. And I loved them all. Like, I've always loved writing, and it was that kind of thing where I was like, I had no idea what I wanted to do though. Like, it felt really broad, because the job I'm in now didn't exist, and I was very much like, I think if you were into writing or fashion, it's like you would be a journalist or a stylist or a photographer. Like, there were small categories of things that you kind of didn't realise that you could be, like, there's so many other pockets and like kind of veins off of those careers that I didn't even know existed. And it was very much like, oh, so you want to go into journalism? And I was like, I didn't know I wanted to do that, but I felt like that's the only thing I could do. So I kind of applied to different universities, and I didn't get into like the red brick ones I wanted to. And even I went to Liverpool in the end, which was amazing. It's just, well, the course was not right at all, but I moved home. Then I applied to LCF and I was like, this is my calling. Didn't get in, thought it was the end of the world. And I was like, I was devastated. I was really heartbroken because I thought that was how you do it.
But especially at that point, because you have you don't know what's going to come after. You don't know that you're going to have the success. So I think at that point, it's like you feel like all those little stamps of approval or not are really significant.
Yeah. Oh, massively.
And everyone who comes on here pretty much says, God, if I'd have known that meant nothing, like it would have been so much more cheering. But I think that when you're young, it's every single step is really important because it's getting you closer to where you want to be.
Completely, and it feels really pivotal. I think the education system all feels really pivotal as well because there's never you're not really given an alternative. Like you're not told that when you finish school, you could intern or you could, you know, go into, like, I'm looking for a word, I can't find it, but apprenticeships and things like that. Like you're never told about those things really. It's always like UCAS University.
Yeah. Or they're not held up as being as good as.
I mean, my parents never put that pressure on me. I was very fortunate that it wasn't. It was very much more school based than home based. They're very much like whatever makes you happy, and they've always very much been like that, which is very cool. Mm. But not getting into universities, dropping out of universities, just did kind of feel a bit like, oh God, I've balls this up. Like this isn't what a successful journalist would do. And I just remember like writing this essay at the application process for LCF and like going for an interview and going home from Ladbroke Grove, just crying on the tube and being like, that's it. What now? And it did feel a bit like what now, because from that point you're like, what do I do? Like, how do I go forward? And it kind of is up to you. And I think you have to have that kind of self drive a little bit. I mean, fortunate at this point, the one thing I think that did kind of give me a bit of a nod of not recognition was when I was at university before I dropped out. I was writing my blog at that point and I'd won a Cosmo blog award, when I mean at the time they felt enormous. It felt like winning a Brit award. And it was something that I kind of won without having to be like, please vote for me, or really knowing that it existed. And I think that was a point where I was kind of like, okay, so people are reading this. And it was that kind of gentle, like, subtle, you can do this, even if things are going wrong, there are other things.
It's not that subtle,
anyway. I mean, at the time,
it
was like, that's the thing. I think I look back now, because I think blogging has changed so much in the last 10 years that I don't know, it probably wouldn't carry the same weight.
So you started your blog in 2010, right?
Yes.
So you're kind of a veteran. What do you think? Veteran of blogging.
I love that.
When you're 17, what do you think's changed? What are the significant things that have changed?
It's changed in so new. I think when I started blogging, Instagram didn't exist. So it was very much, you wrote a blog, you're a blogger. Like that's, like, that was what you did.
And what were you writing about in the early days?
Outfits, fashion, a lot of the things that I write about now.
Beauty as well?
Little bits. Right. Like, I mean, I remember, like, it would just be like, I remember some of the early posts. I went to like Centre Parks, I had a manicure, and it was like a Leighton Denny one. I was like, I'm going to take that bottle and write about it. Or like, I had like a Kath Kidston hand cream, and I was like, this is premium.
Did you have the illness where once you've switched on that side of your brain, everything is content?
Yeah.
And you kind of literally see anything. You're like, I could write about this.
I could write about that. Honestly, I'm in that beautiful pillow. I will write about you. Like, honestly. But I loved it. I love sharing things. And that's always stayed very constant. But I think that was like your only outlet. You didn't have Instagram. It was, the content was slower. It was a bit more long form. I say that some, you'd look back at early posts and be like, God bless you, long form content. That's sweet. But I think like influencer wasn't a word. It wasn't as saturated, which is obviously, there's so many positives to the fact that it is more saturated now because it's a recognised industry. But obviously, as things become more saturated, there's it kind of one word to kind of define a whole industry feels less appropriate now, because obviously people use Instagram for different things and different forms of business, whereas I still feel very much like, oh no, I'm a blogger, because I still blog like 2-3 times a week. I love it. But I think it's kind of almost having to shake off the negative connotations of influencer.
I was going to ask you what you think the merits of a blog versus using Instagram as an Insta blog.
I feel like typically people use Instagram more. Like, that's a complete obvious one, because I think people's attention span is a lot smaller and people want to get content quickly and they want to just see something, get a recommendation, go. So I think it's adapted the way I blog in a way, because it's meant that if I do write a blog post, I feel like it has to be a bit more useful, and it has to have more value, and it has to last longer than, and it, like, I feel like with Instagram, the content on there can be feel quite disposable sometimes, because you're kind of like, I can share a quick outfit picture,
mm-hmm.
and it's quite candid and it's quite diary like, whereas I think on the blog, like, I will post like a guide to somewhere, or like a bigger piece about talking about how I feel, mm. or something like that, because you can't get that on Instagram. So it's trying to offer something that you think, well, you can't get this on there, so yeah. why don't you come over here?
Can I talk to you a bit about the money side of blogging? Because yeah. when you start out, the thing yeah. you do is everything comes with no money, right?
Yeah.
Like, generally speaking. So you're kind of taking a punt and putting a lot of time into something. Yeah. And most people who have blogs on Instagram, and most people I've spoken to, will say, well, I was passionate about it anyway. I'd kind of done it yeah. anyway. It wasn't like I was thinking about the money. But then, obviously, if you put a lot of time into something and you're a grown-up, you yeah. need to eat and pay rent.
Yeah.
So how did you manage that side of it? And when did you start to realise, actually, you know what? I could live off this and it could be my whole job.
Yeah, I mean, I will pull that. Oh, I was just passionate about it. I didn't really miss. And I didn't. And initially, when I started it, there was no money in it. I remember, I think the first thing I ever got sent was a pair of like flared trousers from AX Paris, and I was like, oh, I've made it. I'm like Christina Aguilera right now. Like, I mean, I don't know why she came to mind, but yeah. she, why not?
Big probably gets loads of good stuff.
Yeah. She gets loads of cool flared yeah. trousers.
Yeah.
So I kind of, that was the real like, oh my god, this is, and the thing is, I was working at the time mm-hmm. in retail. I was interning. So I was able to do it and never really be conscious of the fact that I needed to earn from it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't like, okay, if this is going to be a business, we've got to take this seriously, Liv. It was very much just like, oh, this is fun. I'd come home from working at Topshop on a Sunday and be like, oh, stand in the garden, like, oh, mum, can you quickly take a picture of my outfit?
Right.
And then I'd be like, oh, just go home from shift, da-da-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Just because I liked sharing those things. It wasn't like, you can buy my outfit here. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'd tag everything, but I think it's because I saw that's what other people did.
Yeah.
It wasn't like, here's what you can buy. It was more like that I liked seeing what other people wore mm-hmm. and where they got their clothes. But there wasn't like a real like, say, businessman right. element to it.
Yeah.
So it was very much like I was working part-time, and it was very much something because it wasn't ever an industry, I never thought this will be my job in 4 years' time if I keep at it and I can accept brand projects, because that concept wasn't the thing. So it was very much like something might come in and I could like eventually drop one day at working in the shop I was working in. And it very much happened like that, and it was very kind of organic, because as well I lived at home at the time, and I was very lucky to live at home. I wasn't paying rent, so that often meant that like I didn't need to be like, right, we really need to get going, because yeah. because I've grown up in South London, there's like obviously enormous privilege with that when it comes to interning and getting your foot in the door, is that you can live at home rent free.
Yeah.
You don't have to worry about those things, which is something that I think as I've grown up more and more, I'm like, Christ, that's a ridiculous privilege that everyone should have access to be able to get that experience.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Sounds like it very much, perhaps this has a negative connotation, but I don't mean for it to, but sort of sucked you in, as in like you yeah. did a little bit and then you did it more.
Yeah.
And you did it. At what point did you draw your boundaries, and what are your boundaries with it?
I feel like, I don't really, it's very interesting because I think boundaries for me are quite a new thing. Like, I think it's more something that over the last few years I've been more aware of. I think I've always kind of done it with this kind of real sincere naivety that I've kind of, it's been like a diary, and it's always been very much documenting things, and there's never really been this kind of big plan to talk about my life or anything. Whereas I do think in the last few, like, I mean, I was on YouTube quite a lot, and I think that's definitely a platform where I think with comments especially, people are very like, I don't know, you give a little bit, and I think people want a little bit more. And I do the same when I watch YouTubers. I'm kind of like, oh my god, so like, it's almost a bit like reality TV to a point, because you're watching people's lives so intimately, and then you're kind of like, why are they not giving me more? Like, I want to know about what's going on.
It's a funny thing, the blogger, the, let's say the influencer sphere, because it sits between celebrity and normal person, I want to say, in inverted commas. So between the two, on the one hand, you feel like, well, they're just like me, so they should tell me everything because they're like a friend that I can ask anything. And yet, at the same time, it's not quite like that. It's a, I don't want to say persona, but it is a business built around a personality.
It's
in
a
life.
It's a really kind of strange one. And I think, like, again, when I started YouTube, it was very much my point of just like, oh, it's nice to have these big things to document and look back on.
Yeah.
And I think more and more, I'm kind of, as I'm growing up, I'm a bit like, I don't know, I don't have to document everything. I don't have to. And I think I said to you earlier, there's a real grappling with, obviously, the word authenticity is such a huge thing, especially when you share your life online, because you want to be authentic. But equally, I don't think you have to be super vulnerable and expose everything about yourself to be authentic. I think there is a middle ground in which you can exist online and talk about things, but equally you don't have to give everything because you don't owe anyone anything.
It sounds to me like you're a natural chronicler of life. Like, if you'd lived in 1700, perhaps you'd be Boswell, right? Like, writing about life.
One can hope.
And you would have put everything in there. Now that, I mean, his description, I think it was 1700s. Let's say, for argument's sake, 1700s.
I'm not going to pull you up on that.
I'm not sure. Now I'm annoyed because I'm like, when was it? Anyway, whenever he was writing about London, and I'm pretty sure that he writes a description of two people having sex on a bridge, right? And how it, like, looked.
Yeah.
And then he goes on, and he means everything, right? Like, I mean, talk, like, exposes. He was exposing all over the place, right? It was, like, completely, completely revelatory and completely everything. And perhaps you're famous in a scene, but no one knows what you really look like. So you might go in somewhere and say, hi, I'm James Boswell, and people would be like, you wrote that book. But by and large, people can't point a finger at you. You can pretty much write what you want and be very explicit. When you have a blog and a, you know, and your face is in places, everywhere you go, that follows you around.
When I started, it was very much like, you wrote a blog post and you might get a few comments. And it was like, I mean, it was, you'd get more comments on a blog now than you would now, but it wasn't very much like, you were kind of just talking, like, it was like Lizzie McGuire or something. Dear diary. Whereas now, I think perhaps it's getting older, and it's almost how the internet's changing as well, how people are using it, and it's, I don't know, I mean, there's so many people online. I'm not at a point where I'm like, oh, people are just so invested that I need to be more careful. But equally, I think, especially being pregnant, you're kind of like, this is somebody else's life as well now. Like, how much of them do I want to give away? And it's nice to have things just to, for yourself as well. And I think, especially with something like motherhood and parenting, I think so many people have, like, their own experience of it, which is amazing. And again, it's the community aspect that I really value, because you can take so much advice from people, but then sometimes it's so overwhelming that you're like, actually, it's quite nice to just experience it and try and navigate it on your own. I'm more aware of it as I get older, because I'm like, that's a lot of people. And I think you almost become desensitized to it because you follow loads of people on Instagram, you see loads, you see big numbers all the time. And you're very much like, oh, that's nice. And then you're actually like, no, that's they're actual people. And that's quite overwhelming.
It's funny you say that with my much more modest follower number. But I was talking to someone, a little girl who is into makeup, and she's a friend's daughter, and she's like, you know, 10, and she's getting into makeup, and she was like to me, oh, but like, you have this big Instagram following. I was like, no, I don't, like, not in the industry at all. I was like, no, I have, like, very much. And she's like, but that is that many people. And suddenly I had the same thing of thinking, actually, if I even knew that many people, I wouldn't be able to remember who they were. So actually, like, close to 200,000 followers is a hell of a lot of people.
And I think that's the thing, and I'm kind of like, that is actually a lot of people that know like a lot about what's going on with mm-hmm. your life, which mm-hmm. again, like, it's I put it out there, like, yeah. I put it out there to be received, I suppose, yeah. to an extent, but it's also that's a lot of different, like,
yeah.
I think that's the thing. It's like, if you were giving a talk, I always think, like, you wouldn't be able to, like, not, like, that many people would never always be happy with everything you'd said. So it is trying to navigate that and obviously remain really true to your things, but also, like, your things yourself, but also mm. navigate the fact that you might say something and it, not everyone will be happy with that.
Yeah.
But, and I think because of that, like, Joe always, like, my husband always says, like, you know, those people have followed you for an enormity of different reasons. It mm. might be because you love Strictly Come Dancing. It might be because you talk about beauty or fashion or music, and the person that follows you for music might not like that thing you talk about. So it's almost like you're, there's lots of people.
When you're not doing one facet, this is the problem, because people might like one side of you or yeah. one thing you talk about and not be interested in the others. But the thing is, you're a human being.
Yeah.
Which brings me to the idea of representing everything. We were talking about how, you know, you can't possibly stand up for every cause. You can't possibly yeah. represent everything. And yet, if you don't, there can be challenges with yeah. that. I wondered about this in terms of Insecure Girls Club, because that's something about that is that it really homed in on a moment where people were talking about this, and it was yeah. really interesting because people are, insecurity is rife anyway, but with the online world even more so.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that was, it was really interesting. And I remember when you set it up, I was thinking, this is great, but it's such a good place to have that separate platform.
Yeah.
But what made you feel so strongly about that you thought, actually, this is worthy of doing a separate thing?
I think it kind of ties back into the having different facets, and I think because I already spoke about a number of things, mm-hmm. I didn't want it to feel like a secondary thing mm-hmm. to what I do. I didn't want it to be like, oh, a nice piece on the blog about why I feel self-conscious today. I felt like it was a bigger conversation to be had, and I thought, because I'm talking about fashion and travel and da 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 da, it might just get lost within right. that. And it was something I thought, A, I didn't want it to just kind of fall by the wayside, but B, it wasn't just about me. And it was something that I know that when I had conversations on Instagram stories with people, there were a lot of people that felt similarly. And it was nice to have, it's nice to have a platform that isn't mm-hmm. just about me.
What came up again and again? What insecurities?
Just, I think it was that I think with the internet comparison, it was friendships, work, even just things like Instagram, like all of these similar veins we all share. Mm-hmm. And I'd say something really, to me, which felt quite trivial, and someone would be like, no, I feel like that. Mm-hmm. But equally, I think having my own blog and my Instagram, that is primarily about me, but I didn't want it to just be another platform of me talking about why I'm worried about this, that or the other, right. because my experience, as you know, a white, able-bodied, straight woman is very, one of that of extreme privilege, and everyone's in, like, for me just to say, oh God, I feel really worried about this. Like, I'm so aware that sometimes when you kind of talk about those things, they can sound tone deaf, because it's like, oh, well, you live in a nice house in London, like, you write a blog for a living, mm-hmm. like, where's the tiny violin, guys? So it was almost being able to create a platform where other people could talk about their insecurities mm-hmm. and, like, be behind the cameras and talk to people, extend that conversation, but then not just be about me, because it's almost like kind of winding back to the beginning of our conversation, talking about like how, you know, with what I do, you'd think, oh, I love being the centre of attention, yeah. but actually it's talking to people, it's mm-hmm. like documenting things, it's that kind of other side of it, which I've loved so much, and has meant that with the Insecure Girls Club, I've had such a lot of joy from that, because it feels like talking about something that I don't have to, like, I don't have to be the one person. It's kind of like, no, this is about you. This is about all of us.
Do any insecure boys get in touch?
Do you know, they don't, but the thing is, I said to Joe, I was like, Joe was like, there's such a space for that. Yeah. But I was like, I have no authority. I have no space to
maybe Joe could do it.
I said that to him. I was yeah. like, please, like, there needs to be something so, because yeah. I feel like men's insecurities and mental health issues are similar in many ways, but so different. But I'm not a bloke.
Tell me about, because we are talking about you, so I feel like you just said in the most wonderful way that it's not all about you, but I just want to ask about you.
Please.
What are your insecurities? Or rather, what have they been? What tugs at those threads that make you question things?
God, just so many things. I feel comparison. I feel like with friendships, I think every facet you can read into. Like, I know that sometimes I'm like a bit flaky or a bit too needy, or I feel like I'm like, oh God, you're really annoying. You love the sound of your own voice, but people probably think this, people probably think that, and not worthy of being in the job that I'm in. And like, even with things like beauty, I had really bad acne growing up, like awful. Mm. And I feel like that kind of doesn't follow me around, but I'm just very like, I'm like, oh,
it's God. Always in. I mean, I had acne, it's always in you.
Like, it's just, yeah. And it was bad. Yeah. Like, I think I've got a picture, I'll find it later. Yeah.
What did you do visual. When you had acne? Did you cover it with makeup or did no?
No, and I was about like, I mean, it was probably from the age of like 10 to like 13, 14. And I just tried everything. I had like, went to the doctors, went on the pill from about 11. Because that was the only thing that ended up getting rid of it. But it was just like, and I remember starting secondary school and having to have like 8 of my baby teeth out because they wouldn't come out. And I was just like spotty and had about 4 teeth. And I was like, this is cool. Like, I was like, this is a real time for me, guys. But I think there's lots of different things. I mean, even, God, just, oh, I can't, like, I feel like just, I can't begin. But I feel like we're all so similar with the things we all can like worry about and are insecure about.
It's funny because, as you pointed out, sort of you live this one existence, this is your life, but then someone who is from a completely different background, completely different appearance, completely different ability level, whatever it is, generally speaking, I have found that you talk to people from anywhere with any life experience and there are so many more things that unite than divide you, and all the things that divide you are quite surface, and actually the human experience is really similar.
I think that's it, and I think that's what I found a lot with the Insecure Girls Club. Like, it's been like, there are so many like common themes that we'll get submissions about or get emails about, and it's so nice because I mean, we have pieces about people like, I don't know, like about female health. A girl called Charlotte wrote a piece about like really hating being at home alone and how anxious it makes her feel. And
I get that.
And I hate it.
That piece. I'm gonna have to read it.
And that's how I've always felt like that. And I felt really silly because I'm a grown woman. Like, I should be able to be at home alone.
And I'm pathetic about being at home alone.
I'm pathetic. Yeah. I really am. Like, and I hate it. I hate spending a night alone, which is ridiculous. And even saying out loud, people go, oh my God, come on, grow up.
But I have to turn the switch in my head, so I'll be scared and I'll be thinking, is a poltergeist gonna come in, or is a criminal gonna
which is it today, guys?
Supernatural, is it real? And then I have to have this moment where I go, no, you are a grown-up, you go to bed.
Like, and that's how I feel. I'm like, I can't watch scary films for that reason.
I watched what's the one with the Fool, the one with Jamie Dornan.
Oh, I haven't watched that. Scary.
Do not watch it if you're scared of being at home alone, because it took about a year for me to get over.
Yes, I watched. Is it kind of similar to oh my God, why is my brain just collapsed? Luther, is it?
Oh yes, but only he literally stands outside women's houses, breaks in when they're not there, and it's like, so it's, so if you're a woman who's ever at home alone, it's
because
really
I had to
scary.
Ask my sister, and I was like, so where is it on the Luther scale?
Yeah, don't
and she was
watch
like
it.
It's worse than that.
Don't watch it. Yeah, it's worse psychologically.
Yeah,
I think the idea of someone, and he watches people, and that's the other thing.
Can't do that.
Hate that. When you are insecure, when you have these challenges, what is it in your mind that steadies you? Is it generally someone else coming in like Joe saying you're fine, or do you have like a mantra or way of dealing with it?
It's sometimes it's a bit of both, and sometimes I'm really good at picking myself out of things, and I'm really good at, like, I think it's almost having the club, and having the book. I've kind of taught myself a lot of the things, and it sounds like I've had to start taking my own advice off. I'm like, kind of like, if I'm dishing it out, like, you've got to start being able to take it. And to a point, I'm very good at kind of, you know, talking myself down and being like, okay, what's rational here, what isn't? And Joe is like, I mean, I'm very fortunate. He's a great leveler. He's very good at just being like, even if I'm just like, oh, look at this person, they're doing a great thing. He's like, well, you could be doing that if you wanted to, and you've chosen not to do that thing.
It's so funny when people say that to you. I had this conversation with actually Rebecca Reed, who we both know. And I said to her, she was saying something about something she didn't do. And I said, oh yeah, I give loads of advice to people to go and do things and you can make anything happen. And yet the sort of 3 things I want most of my life I haven't done.
Yeah.
Because I'm too scared to do them. Not because they're beyond my reach, just because I've been like, oh, they're too important to me.
Yeah.
So I don't want to taint it by even trying.
Yeah, I think that's it. And you kind of get into your own head, even if it's something really trivial online, like, I don't know, you see someone making, this is a really terrible example, but I'm going to use it, like, a really cool reel on Instagram.
Yeah.
and or like talking about certain things, and Joe's like, well, you could be doing that, like you could be doing that, but you're not, and that's you've chosen not to do that. Either because it's not the kind of thing you want to do, and you, or the kind of content you enjoy, or because it's just not something that's spread that you're that we want to do right now. And I'm like, oh yeah,
yeah.
But I think like typically, like it just I try and like, you know, there's people I follow online. I'm like, okay, I can, like I'm really lucky that I've got a really good kind of circuit of friends that I can talk to about wobbles and. They feel very similarly and they're able to kind of say the right thing and vice versa. But I think it's just knowing the things that can pick you up and knowing it's okay to like step away from it as well. Yeah. And like just be like, okay, it's okay to indulge myself in feeling a bit shitty every now and again. And, you know, as long as it's like, I think sometimes if it goes on for a bit of a while, like, okay, we need to deal with this properly. But sometimes just like, I've had a crap couple of days. Like I can wallow in it a little bit. Like we're human.
What do you think the future of the job you do is, like influencing, do you think it's going to remain on Instagram?
I honestly couldn't tell you. I'd love to be able to tell you, because I think that's the one thing, especially with this year, I feel like we're all kind of just like, what is the future of anything?
Yeah.
But I do feel like I love security. I love like knowing, like I kind of to a point love the idea of being in a kind of 9-to-5 in an office, because I feel like there's kind of that consistency with the everyday, and every month you get paid, then you have appraisals, and it's very much like of routine. And I know someone on the other side might be like, oh, all I want to do is be freelance. Yeah. But I think I just couldn't tell you. In the last 10 years, it's changed enormously for great reasons, for less great reasons. But I'd no idea.
And what do you have that you want to do? Is there anything left?
God, there is, but I feel like I've kind of just taken everything in my stride to a point, which sounds like if you'd have told me when I started, I'd have written a book. I'd have been like, no.
I was going to say, because that's enormous.
That's enormous. Yeah. And I just feel like so grateful that I've had the opportunities that I've had, that I'm kind of like, anything feels like a bonus. Like I feel like I almost feel spoiled sometimes. I'm like, I don't deserve any of this. Like what? Like I've conned everyone. But it is just this kind of thing that I'm like, if I can continue doing what I'm doing and almost keep this community, and even especially with the Insecure Girls Club, I'd love to grow that in a way, and I'd love to, like, I work with one other person on it now, Charlotte, who's incredible, but I'd love to perhaps that to be something that could have more voices and even like pay more writers, and just that to be a bigger thing. That's something I'm navigating, because I'm like, I'm a terrible business person, like just the whole,
you're creative who's inadvertently
anything with like even like tax returns, I just cannot get my head around it, and I find it very stressful. But I'd love to be able to be more business minded with that, so I could grow things in a healthy way which doesn't feel overwhelming and scary.
Now I'm going to finish by asking you the questions I ask all my guests.
Okay.
That I did outline to you at the beginning, and you said you were struggling a bit with that. First on advice to your younger self at any age, what would you say?
It'll be okay. It'll be like, it's weird because sometimes I think, oh, everything happens for a reason, and in some ways I really believe that, and in some ways I'm just like, that is bollocks, because there's so much shit going on in the world that it can't possibly, but I do think it'll be okay. Like, you'll work it out. Like, if things don't go right, it's not the end. Like, it's okay. And actually you can learn something from everything going wrong.
Greatest achievement, personal or professional?
Oh God, I don't know, like, there's so many. There's like one half of me, the sappy half of me, is really like, oh, just keeping a really great friendship group and having a loving family and a great boyfriend and being able to maintain that feels like such an achievement, because I feel like I've got such a great network of people around me. I feel so lucky to have and support me that I'm just like, that's quite a big achievement, because I've not annoyed everyone to disappear. But also just being able to be self-sufficient for nearly 10 years and like have a business, and that's quite good sometimes.
Three guests, dead or alive, that you'd have at a dinner party.
This is really stressful. I'm still like, I think when you first asked me this, I was troubled by this question, because I always feel like I never give this enough thought.
Please say the same person you said.
I'm going to say the first person I said before was Bob Mortimer. Yes. And I do stand by that, because I feel like I this is all subject to change. Like, if you ask me this in a week's time, it would still be Bob Mortimer, but the other guests might change. But I feel like I love him to bits. I think he's the funniest person. He's really normal. But I think he'd just be like, a real comfort at a dinner table, and you could put anyone else with him and he'd just make everyone laugh.
You always need someone like that at a dinner party who can like carry it a bit, because you're generally like getting the food or the drinks.
Well, that's the
like
thing that. You just need someone that everyone feels relaxed around and can like crack a few jokes but not be like too obnoxiously loud. He'd be great. And I think what a funny story, when I launched my book, my agents, they gave me a card, and in it they had like, do you know Pogs, like little, I think they're called Pogs, but like cutouts of Mark Ronson and Bob Mortimer's face that just fell out, and I was like, that's the thing. I do like Bob Mortimer.
Why Mark Ronson?
I do like Mark Ronson as well. Okay. I mean, maybe I'd invite him to dinner, but I feel like I'd be like a bit intimidated by having a lot of very cool people.
I was going to say, he's quite cool.
He's very cool. Yeah. Like, I really like him, but I think I'd be a little bit intimidated by how, like...
intimidated by him.
He's someone that could be really standoffish.
Yeah, he's actually cool. Yeah, he's probably really nice.
I get the impression he's nice. He's quite self-deprecating, which I find quite endearing. Because, obviously, that's my brand. I did say George Harrison as well. I feel like I just... But again, that's...
For the music or for him?
A bit of both. Oh. I feel like the music... But then I feel like I... But then I'm like, McCartney. It's like...
Why him over other Beatles?
I mean, this is what I'm trying to...
I've got my mind set on you, but...
But this is what I've just thought now. There's actually a really great George Harrison music video I'm going to send you after this that you have to watch.
Yeah.
But now I'm actually like, oh, McCartney, because he's alive and I feel like he could... But I mean... I can be dead. I couldn't.
Yeah, because you're allowed dead or alive.
Could invite John.
And as I said, he was also a Hare Krishna, which I enjoyed a lot.
Could invite John, but I think I'd leave Ringo. Maybe Ringo, maybe 30 or 40 years ago, I would have had, but...
No one ever cares about Ringo, do they?
I do like Ringo. I just think now he's just... I don't know. I like him less now than I ever have.
So all music. Well, not all music, but lots of music.
Yeah,
in there.
I'm trying to...
True to your roots.
Yeah, true to my roots. I know. I feel like there's one more. There's got to be somewhere. I'm going to get home and I'm going to be like, no.
Well, I tell you what. If you change your mind, I'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, please do.
Full extensive.
Do you know what? It's going to have like, honestly, please refer to the show notes, everyone.
Please refer to the show notes.
There's going to be about 50 extra guests.
Also, I am aware that we've spoken a lot about everything, but not so much about beauty.
Yeah.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to get Liv to run through her beauty hit list, and we're going to do that in a video. So again, I'm going to link to that underneath.
Gorgeous.
Before I let Liv leave my world. Thank you so much for coming on
the
show.
Thank you for having me.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.